Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Huntington Press and Las Vegas advisor-publisher Anthony Curtis. We'll be talking about the new Huntington Press poker book and also about the Las Vegas Advisor Member Rewards booklet. In addition to those topics, Anthony is all around knowledgeable about most things gambling related, so we'll be having a roundtable discussion about a number of gambling topics. So, Anthony Curtis, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
On last week's show, two APs from the Midwest told about finding a video poker machine that was mismarked. It was in a small bank of dollar machines with three progressives starting at three times the usual amount because it used to be a 15-coin machine and now was a 5-coin machine with the same progressives. Anyway, they played it for a week or so until the machines were shut down and cleared a whole bunch of money. We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com addressing some aspects of the situation. First, especially if this was on tribal lands, the money should be removed from the casino regularly. It is very possible that the casino will consider these earnings ill-gotten because of the goof by the slot department and try to confiscate it from you. So you don't want to keep the money on property at all. Therefore, even if you have a car, you don't want to park the car on tribal lands. And even if they give you a free hotel room, you want to pay for your own hotel room off property and get transported back and forth by taxi. In addition, you probably want to have your cell phone password protected because sometimes they try to go back and read your text messages. Richard, these things struck me as good advice. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounded to me like somebody who got burned really badly. And I do recall some cases of some Indian casinos, particularly in Arizona, where some players really, really were mistreated. First of all, the password on your phone is, you know, should be standard operating procedure for anybody. I mean, if you get pulled into the back room, they're going to go through your phone. So you want to have a password on your phone. I'm a little curious about why, and I like the idea of staying off property, particularly with Indian casinos. I'm not quite sure why you wouldn't want to use your own car. I'm not sure what it is that they would do to your car.
Impound it and search it, presumably.
Well, okay, but I wouldn't keep anything in my car that they could find. So, all good advice, I think.
My comment? I don't know. I used to think that that was all people being really paranoid. But I've heard too many things. I've heard, you know, especially recently, I've heard too many stories. And not just about Indians. You know, I mean, just about everything that has to do. Different people in casinos are more, you know, kind of zealous than others, I reckon, you know. And you got to be really careful. If you're carrying money, anything, even in Vegas. I mean, I walked these streets in Vegas for years and years and years, and I've never had a real problem. Why? Because I pay attention. So, you know, you need to pay attention. You need to take precautions.
You're
so
also fit, and you're under 60, and you're...
And you run really fast.
Well, only a couple of those things now.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, welcome to the club. All right, changing subjects. We also discussed last week a player getting his name on the Oregon Surveillance Network, OSN, and he was trying to get off it, wanted to know if there was anything he could do about it. Richard basically said, nope. Anyway, he also wants to know, so if you do a name change or an alias of some sort, how do you do it? And if you do, can you get comps using that alias if your original name is on OSN? Richard.
Well, first of all, a lot of people went to for a period of time, a lot of people started using, for lack of a better word, fake IDs. And I'm not a proponent of that. I don't use fake IDs. I don't think it's a good idea. And almost every Advantage player that I know that has played for any length of time has had at least one legal name change. So, you know, name changes are cheap. They're really not that difficult. It's, you know, definitely worth doing, in my opinion. And now, hopefully, you will have learned your lesson and not use a player's card in your real name if you're playing something that can get you a lot of heat. So if you want to play for comps, then don't do anything that's going to get you heat and use your new name and your new player's card. And if you're going to do something like count cards where you could easily get flyered, then don't use a player's card. I mean, that's my advice.
Yeah, my feeling on that, on IDs, is that, you know, I've had pushback on this. People argue with me, but I've seen it happen a lot. I've done it myself, and I've seen other people do it, that as long as you're using an ID not to defraud, I mean, where you're okay. I mean, even if it's – a key to that is put your real Social Security number on it. So if your name's Bill Smith and you want to go John Johnson, that's pretty much okay as long as you put an identifying mark like your real Social Security number. Now, again, this is not legal advice.
Wait a minute. I got to stop you there.
See, I knew you were going to argue.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you why. Because it's the ID itself, right? So if you make a fake Nevada driver's license, that's a felony.
Disagree. You can use it as long as you're not using it to defraud.
You can use any name that you like as long as you're not trying to defraud.
All right, well, anybody who's listening out there, they should get legal advice.
Yeah.
But I've done it myself for years, and I've known other people who have done it, and it's been pulled up and it's been questioned, and it's always come down to this. Now, the thing is, you can't do it. For example, if you want to play the football contest at Coast Casinos, the free one, and you can only play it once, but you've got two IDs, so you play it twice. Now, that's defraud. I mean, now you're using it for the wrong purpose. But if you use it, and it goes back to what I do, Richard, is like people have pen names. They have pen names that they use, and they use different names.
Well, I got three of them in this room.
Yeah, no, but,
yeah,
but
so you've got to be able to use it.
In the old days, you know, when I lived in California, pre-9/11, you could go into DMV and say, I'm a writer, and I want to use this name. And they would give you a legitimate California driver's license in that name.
I think the way you do it now is you do it as a DBA. I think you don't do it through DMV, but you do it through legally as a DBA.
That's legal, and there's no problem with doing that. But the problem is when you go sign up for the player's card, they want to see a picture ID.
Right.
And where do you get that picture ID in the other name?
I don't think it's legal if you can back it up with legal, something showing this is your real name. So, again, I'm just saying that in practical application, I've done it a lot without a problem. But I've always done it straight as an arrow. I've never used it with wrong purposes, or I've never tried to – you know, do things that I shouldn't do with it.
Well, I have to say this. I know there are a lot of people who use these IDs, and once they get that player's card, then they get rid of the fake ID.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they – once they've done that, I don't think they have a legal problem at that point. But, there are a lot of people who have been busted in airports carrying multiple IDs.
That's where things have gotten stickier, too. But, again, these guys are doing other things. So I guess my advice is not that good, because most of the people who are listening who want to do it want that other ID for purposes that might get them in trouble.
Oh, and I have to say, there's one other option for table games players. So if you're a 40-year-old white guy and you have a friend who's a 40-year-old white guy that doesn't gamble, have him get a player's card and just use his. Now, you know, that's fine. You're not there's no intent to defraud. Now,
yeah, there is. That's strictly against the rules of most casinos.
I'm not saying not if you don't collect any comps. If you're just using it because the pit boss wants to, you know, the pit bosses feel more comfortable with you as a player if you hand them a player's card, right? So if I hand them a player's card in somebody else's name, but I don't try to use any comps on that card, I'm not trying to defraud anybody.
It's you know, it's choppy water any way you look at it. You know, anybody who's any time in a casino using a different ID than their real name, it's funky. All I'm saying is that I think that if you're doing it for kind of reasonable reasons, I think you're okay. I certainly wouldn't do it on anything where big money was involved because that's just going to be something you're going to use against you.
Yeah, and as I said at the beginning, name changes are cheap and they're really not that hard.
Yeah, I know this guy who teaches classes at the South Point using a fake name, but fortunately there's no big money involved, so I guess that's okay. Let's move on. In Atlantic City, the twice bankrupted Revel Casino has been sold, and most recently to a guy who paid $95 million and wants to make it a water park, also being a hub for a water ferry traveling from New York City to Atlantic City. From the outside, this strikes me as the preamble to bankruptcy number 3. Any thoughts on this, one way or the other?
I don't know. Didn't they spend over $1 billion building
over
that
thing? $2 billion.
$2 billion. So wow. $95 million seems pretty cheap, but I don't know if Atlantic City has a future. I mean,
well, I make that plan about -200 against. I mean, you know, I really don't think that's going to happen. I mean, there's a lot of jockeying for position going on there. You know, originally, wasn't it supposed to, the original guy who was going to take it was going to make it a think tank or something?
He was going to make it a university for bright students who were free, white, and 21.
Really?
That went over really well.
Wow. Is that the former owner of the Imperial Palace?
No, I mean, this is the guy who got it. This is the guy who ended up getting it. He wanted to do it a think tank for the brightest people, but they had to be free and white and 21.
I'll be honest, I can't keep up with that one. You know, and I can't keep up with what's going on in Atlantic City in general, but is it Revel? Revel, not Revel. Revel, right? Revel is one that I'll read all the news things in the morning. I come in early and I read the news and I get to this Revel stuff and it bounces off my head. I just can't keep up with it anymore. I don't know what's going to happen there.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to have any more $100,000 rebate on lost deals. I'll just put it that way.
I that's a pretty good bet. We received an email asking if casinos typically allow players to use video poker strategy cards in a casino. Now, I know something about this, since the cards produced by myself and Liam W. Daly are largely considered to be the best ones out there. And they also happen to be published by Anthony Curtis. You may have heard of him. The short answer is casinos don't seem to mind if you use such cards. In the 15 years since ours first came out, I've heard one story of a casino, a Native Indian casino in Florida, telling people to put it away. And that's it. And if they ask you to put away, well, I suggest you put it away. But generally speaking, it's not a problem. Now, Anthony, you also produce table game strategy cards by James Grosjean. Mm-hmm. Are players able to use those in casinos?
As far as I understand, yes. As far as strategy cards go, I have never your story just now that you heard about it once is the first I've ever heard of anyone ever telling anyone to put it away, unless, as you mentioned before the show started and we were talking, they're on a table game and they're taking an exceedingly long time to play because they're looking at their card. Then, you know, a boss might come over and say, hey, man, you know, you got to do something. You can't sit there and read that thing all day long. Now, I've seen that. I've never seen one instance where anybody has stopped anybody from using, let's say, a video poker strategy card. For some reason, you know, technically, would that be a device? I reckon it's a device, right? In some places, it's not allowed. But I've never heard of anybody saying no. I use them. Everyone I know uses them.
I had a friend who actually had a conversation with a surveillance guy who had been watching him play video poker and said, pardon me, you know, we saw you using your card. That's fine as long as you don't use your phone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because I think the phone they're going to consider a device.
Which is funny because, you know, you mentioned, you know, you plug our product. Okay. You know, I would say that those strategy cards, you know, books come and go and things like that. I would say those strategy cards, the Dancer daily strategy cards for video poker, unabashed, you know, plug here. But I just don't think they'll ever be matched. I think those are just such great strategy cards. And they'll get you as close as using a phone, you know what I mean, or having a computer right there. If you learn the strategies on the back part of the card, they're as good as you're going to get, really. And nobody really takes umbrage to that. As far as the Grosjean cards, you know, he's so feared by people who know who he is in the casinos that some people go, oh, my God, that must be a terrible thing. But the interesting thing is all of the cards that he has basic strategies for will not get you into a positive expectation situation. Those are all negative expectation games, and all they'll do is cut your disadvantage from as much as 20-some percent in some cases down to like 3 and 4%.
You know, I've never seen anyone actually using them in the casino, but, man, I mean, people play some of those table games so unbelievably badly. Yeah. I mean, people are playing at minus 15 or 20% on some of those games.
Yeah.
And those cards would save them an enormous amount of money.
Well, here's the irony of it. You know, there's been so many things done, so many books, so much, you know, software to help people win. And Grosjean and I had a discussion when these cards came out. And he said, and he's correct, and I later wrote it in Las Vegas Advisor, is that these cards may save more people more money than many of the blackjack books and everything else, because those will just, you know, bring you closer incrementally sometimes, whereas these cards will be factors of, you know, who knows, 4 and 5 and 6 times, you know, expected value. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, if you're a bad blackjack player, maybe you're playing at minus 1.5 or 2%. And
right.
So, yeah, you'll save a percent and a half.
These people are playing above, you know, negative 20%.
Yeah.
With some of the way they're playing.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
They usually play blackjack for more money when they play, or for longer.
Well, and blackjack's a faster game.
Yeah, and carnival games are, you don't typically play them as long or for as much money.
Right, and if you took the body of all the players, then certainly no, it wouldn't be, because you don't have enough people playing Ultimate Texas Hold'em and enough people playing Let It Ride and whatever. But just on an individual basis, they're probably saving individuals a lot more than almost anything they can do. It's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. In 1989, the Las Vegas Hilton began the $1,500 entry fee professional football handicapping contest against the spread called the Super Contest. We've had Steve Fezzik on the show a couple times. He's won this contest twice. Even though the Las Vegas Hilton became LVH and now is called Westgate, the contest survives. Of the 1,403 entries this year, about one-third of them do not live in Las Vegas, and they use the same proxy service to submit their entries for them. This service, called footballcontestproxy.com, charges $300 per year, plus 2% of any winnings. Quotes from Jay Cornegay, director of the Westgate Superbook, indicates that the proxy services are legal and one of the reasons the contest keeps growing every year. Although players must sign up in person over the summer before an NFL season, after that they may use the proxies. Now, until I read an article this week, I didn't even know this proxy service existed or that it was legal. It sounds like an opportunity for out-of-town sports bettors. I suppose there's always room for other proxy services, but the prices charged and the reputation of this particular service is such that there doesn't seem to be much room for undercutting the prices. Any comments, Anthony?
The proxy service is certainly one of the reasons that this contest has grown. It's been legal and allowed for a long time. There are alternatives. This company, the price you just quoted, I know of alternatives to that for less. We have a guy that hangs out on LVASports.com. His name's Larry Kay. He has a service which is less than that, and he handles quite a few, but this one company has the market. It's a great service. It makes a lot of sense. Everybody wins. Everyone's happy with it. It's perfect. It's commerce, man.
I'm kind of surprised that the contest keeps growing now that there's FanDuel and those things. I would think that the fantasy sites would start to eat into.
Well, they haven't been. The fantasy sites haven't been a force for long enough to know. I think it's going to be the other way around. I actually think sports is taking market share from poker in general, in fantasy and all of that. And I think that this is, goes part and parcel with that. It's almost like, they've done a great job there. Kornegai and the Westgate now, Hilton, whatever you want to call it, they got this thing positioned as the World Series of poker for sports betting. And everyone's always going to want that title. They're always going to want to play in the big leagues and say they've done it. Price is right. It's only $1,500. I say only, but I mean, it's not a $10,000 buy-in like the World Series. And they have just done an incredible job with it. I would absolutely take the over 1403 for next year. What I find interesting is how good these guys are getting. I mean, the winner was 76%+. That's insane. That's
wow.
Insane. And I mean, there's a lot of quants playing it. There's a lot of really talented people. And you also have to realize that as more people play, just regular fluctuation is going to allow certain things to happen that didn't happen in the past, and you're going to have guys that do better. But you're getting a high percentage of them scoring in the high 60s and above. I mean, these people are brilliant. It's not an easy gig, I'll tell you.
But those aren't the same as the betting lines, right? I mean,
they're betting against the spread. They're not just picking winners. They're betting against the spread. So this is 76% against the spread. Now it's stale, because they put those lines out at the beginning of the week. So some of them get stale, and certainly it's not like betting at market numbers. So there's a little bit of that that's going to skew it. But still, 76% is just kind of ungodly, to be honest.
You need about 53 or 54% to break even.
Yeah.
I had, switching topic a little bit, I had a bit of a discussion with Frank B. from LVA Sports today or yesterday about Bitcoin and the future of sports betting with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
If you can bet anonymously with Bitcoin, which is the whole point, how is a sports book going to bar you?
It's true. I mean, well, that's the point that Frank made. He wrote a great article that, I'll tell you, Frank B., this guy's going to get known. I mean, the stuff that he's doing, LVA Sports is just kind of in its infancy, but we got that guy, and he's doing some amazing stuff. And he wrote an article about Bitcoin and sports books. And yeah, there's a lot of reasons to want to do it. But the problem is the volatility of Bitcoin. So if you get into Bitcoin only to bet sports, you're fading something that you have no control and nobody understands. And he got into it. he got into it about 2 weeks ago, and it had one of the most precipitous drops that it's ever had. I mean, he bought $1,000 worth. I shouldn't say this; it's not nice. But I mean, I think his thousand's down to about $350 now. And he wrote this article going, "You're not really betting on sports; you're betting on Bitcoin." And I followed it up with a comment saying, "Look, if you got Bitcoin, it doesn't matter what you do. You can put it into a sports book, and it's going to fluctuate. It doesn't matter. But you shouldn't buy Bitcoin just to bet in a Bitcoin book, because you're speculating on that currency or whatever you want to call it."
Yeah, but I mean, it'll be an interesting problem for the books to deal with assuming that the currency stabilizes
at
some point.
I don't think it's gonna catch on. They're trying a few places. The D is behind it in Golden Gate downtown, and they've got a couple of what they call Bitcoin kiosks. There's now two in Vegas. But it's just too wild. And I don't think people are gonna want to deal with it for it's just too unstable.
Right. But if it stabilizes, I mean, I'm of two minds. I just can't imagine the US government allowing it. I think they will do everything they can to crush it they can't control it. But I I also saw a program just this week. I have no idea if this is true, but it was a program of John Stossel's talking about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And he was claiming that 60% of the use of Bitcoins is for gambling.
Really?
There are online casinos now that are entirely in Bitcoin, and obviously you can play from the United States if it's in Bitcoin. But
that was the warning there. In this article is don't buy Bitcoin just to play at a Bitcoin casino. If you've bought Bitcoin for whatever reason, because you think it's going to work, to speculate, whatever you're doing, it doesn't matter what you do with it, really, because you're going to it's going to fluctuate and whatever. But if you're buying it simply to do that, it's sort of double-barreled. You know, you've got to be a winning player to begin with, and you got to be a winning player that's good enough to fade the drop in Bitcoin the way it's been going, you know, so it's tough.
Yeah.
All right. Las Vegas Advisor every year puts out a members reward booklet. It used to be called the Pocketbook of Values. So I have seen the 2015 booklet. There seems to be a lot more gambling opportunities in it. Anthony, how is this year's different than last year's?
This year's book is, you know, everybody gets on my case online because I always go, this year's better than ever, you know, and they're like, geez, I'm sick
of it. I think you said that last year.
I know, but it was better than ever last year, and it's better than ever this year, too. I mean, it really is. I hate to say, you know, LVA is getting legitimized, you know, we've been doing this for so long, but it's sort of like everybody's on board now, you know, where for a long time we couldn't. For example, this year we have every single casino downtown, every single one, not to mention Slotzilla. You know, we made a deal with Slotzilla, which is a zip line down there. They had never done a deal with anybody ever before. And we've got a 25% saving, which will save a couple, $20. You know, I mean, it's great. $20 is $20. So a lot more are coming on board. The other thing that's happening is advances in players clubs, you know, going back to our ID thing and everything else. You know, I'm not for all the getting around this stuff, because if people can counterfeit coupons or they can double dip and things like that, or triple and quadruple dip, it makes it tougher for us to get good deals because the casinos go, we don't want to deal with it. But players clubs are now getting so good that you have to go through the club to use gambling coupons. So if we've got a $25 offer, and whether it's a match play or it's some kind of a bonus or whatever, you've got to go through the Players Club to do that. And they feel much more safe because in the, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they were literally taking our member rewards book and they were counterfeiting it. We actually followed one group down to South America and found that they were paying to get books counterfeited and bringing them in. We had surveillance. You know, we were working with the casinos. We had surveillance of deals being done out of the back of people's trunks where we would see just stacks and stacks and stacks of counterfeit member rewards books. It's insane. But when you're talking about a book, for instance, this year's book has $452 worth of expected value on the gambling coupons alone. So if you're spending $37 or if you're spending $6 to get it or $3 to get a book counterfeited and you're getting $452 worth, you can see why that would be valuable to people. And it made it very difficult for us to give our customers what they wanted, which were like match plays and stuff so they can have fun and get their gaming started and, you know, that sort of thing. Well, now it's becoming much more difficult for anybody to take advantage of it in a wrong way. So it gets better and better. Plus, we've gotten better stuff in all the areas, in dining and in shows. And just, you know, everything we've done is gone a notch up this year.
So if there's a coupon like $25 match play or whatever, you have to go to the booth and then they give you the match play. And then there's some record. So if you come back a week later with another coupon,
right,
you can't do it?
Right. They give you something at the booth that you have to take to the table. So you can't go back to the booth and get it again. The only way you can do it is get another one illegally somehow, because we limit their use to 2 per household. You know, we've had people come to us and say, I'll buy 100 of them from you. And I go, we can't sell it to you. Well, that's $3,700 I just turned down. But we won't do that to keep the integrity of the program. But there's 2 per household, so you know, even a guy, if the husband says, I'm going to do it twice, he can't do it. He's got to do it once, and his wife's got to do it once.
Well, his wife has to go to the booth and get the coupon.
Then he could play it.
And then he has 2 coupons, and so he could do it twice.
Yeah, he could. But, you know, what I'm saying is that if a single person tried to go there and do it the second time, the only way they could do it is to have a second ID and a second book. That's pretty hard to do, and you can't do that too many times. So everybody always gets on my case. They go, how dare you? You're the guy who started all this stuff. You know, you used to run these coupons and everything else. And, you know, you coined the term and everything else. And I said, yeah, well, I did, but I didn't counterfeit them. You know, I never did.
I certainly
pulled them out of the trash, the gas station trash.
Well, a couple times,
I used to fly in from Los Angeles, and American West Airlines would have these coupons in the middle of their flyers. And so I would show up at the Stardust with like 100 of these coupons and a $20 tip, and they'd give me all the coupon books I could use, officially one per day, and I would usually try to keep it down to 15 a day or something. It was my first couple of years here scrounging to make it. I definitely abused the coupon system. And so I understand the people who are doing that, and I also understand why casinos hate it.
Yeah. But, I mean, those people who are doing it, they're much fewer than, you know, the customers that go in and just have fun. I mean, I'll give you some real quick numbers on this. Like I said, it's $452 in EV if you use them all to maximum value. And anybody really could. You know, it's not that hard to get through them all. Free play, I mean, what I call AI, which is any idiot. The value of that, by any idiot, I mean a match play that you don't need any special skills. You just play the match play or you get the free play or whatever. The any idiot value of this book is $249. Pretty strong. I mean, you could hand it to your girlfriend and she'd be a $249.
You need to know how
to
play. You need to have some concept of the game to use a match play coupon.
Well, you need to know how to hit and stand. But well, I mean, but even if you're a bad player, this will crush your negative expectations.
Well, I understand, but using it at face value is she's not going to get the full.
Well, that's why he went from 452 down to 250 or no. 249 or whatever.
No, he was saying any idiot can get the 249. I'm saying no, you got to be a pretty good player to get the 249.
No,
so
I mean,
you might
Blackjack's
only get 220.
Right?
Blackjack's pretty intuitive. No, I cut certain ones out when I do these different values. The 452 was if you use every one. Now some of those require that you're playing expert video poker. The palms is like very clever. The palms will give you X amount of free play, but if you're playing at a negative 1.5%, you're coming out negative. But if you play the palms best machines and you're using this, then it's just free money for you. So I mean, that's how we're that serious about it, you know, and careful when we analyze the values of these things. But I mean, I see what Bob's saying. You know, if you absolutely have no idea and you're hitting 18s and stuff, okay, yeah, that value will go down. But I'm assuming that people are going to play pretty close to basic strategy, which is a fairly reasonable assumption now. Free play alone, just free play. So there ain't nothing to do there, but go and load it up on the machine is $65 worth. So, you know, the value
of load it up on a machine and play it.
Play it through once.
Well, but you need some skill to play it through once.
How bad can you be?
Come to my classes and
you
listen
can't
to the
play
questions
it negative
I get
100%,
sometimes.
Right? You only have to play it through once. So
well,
it's worth something.
I believe that. We had a customer the other day who bought Bob's program, Video Poker for Winners, and said, I don't know what to do with it. They called us. I don't know what to do with it. We kept trying to talk them through it. And finally, the customer said, I don't have a computer. So I guess anything can happen, yeah.
Okay. So, and they get it for signing up for the Las Vegas Advisor, and they get the 12 months worth of...
They get the LVA, they get the other things we put together. For example, we have right now, for the first 3 months until March 31st, we have a sort of a special extra offer for a 2-for-1 Wicked Spoon Buffet at Cosmopolitan. All right, so it's $37 to sign up if you want the online only and you don't want to be mailed copies, and the Cosmopolitan Buffet is $38. You know, so I mean, you go with you and your wife or girlfriend or your friend or whatever, and you got it back. You know, it's strong. I mean, my job is to find things like this, and I've looked at every program on earth, and there's nothing better than this. There really isn't. So I don't mind saying it.
All right. Now, you have a new poker book out. It's called Flop Turn River. In many ways, it's the continuation of the Kill Phil series of poker books. So how is this similar to the earlier ones, and how is it different?
This is different. I'm happy to get this opportunity to talk about it. We haven't really launched a big release of it, but we have sold it throughout the Christmas season, and it's gotten its reviews. Some people have grabbed it right away because it's got the Kill Phil guys and the Kill Everyone guys, meaning Lee Nelson, Tyson Stribe. It's also got Joe Hashem, who was he's one of the co-authors. He was
World
champion.
Poker champ.
Yeah, Tony Dunst and Dennis Waterman are the other authors.
How did that happen that you ended up with five authors on this book?
These guys, birds of a feather type thing. You know, these guys, they get together and they talk these things out, and they all have different skills. And I talked to Lee about that. Lee Nelson's always he's the ringleader. I mean, Lee Nelson is one heck of a gambling writer and player himself. And these other guys have talents that he doesn't have. For example, Tyson Stribe is fantastic in the game theory, equilibrium areas. The other guys are good at it, real good at it, probably better than me, but no one's like Tyson. So they, you know, they work together. These guys and others are better writers. You know, Tyson's a pretty good writer, but Lee's a really great writer. You know, things like that. And
so these guys are all friends.
Yeah, they're all buds.
Okay.
And Lee works out of you know, down under. You know, in New Zealand, not Australia, but New Zealand. So he got friends to be friends with Joe Hashem, and they all got together and said, "Let's do a book together." So anyway, this book has been seen, and it's starting to get some reviews, and some people on, you know, what they call the kids on 2+2, the guys who are, you know, they're really sharp. They're definitely sharp at poker, and they love these other books, and they've read this one. And they go, well, that's not what I expected. Well, because this wasn't made for them. You know, this is a workbook for players, not that are at the highest level, at the highest echelon of poker players. They're going to know most of this stuff. This is for people in the middle. And this isn't for absolute beginners at all. This is for people in the middle who are really crafting their game, honing their game, making their game better, and getting ready to go to the next level. And the way I put it is when I played, I got pretty famous playing blackjack and crap tournaments on the Stanford Wong team. And Wong had a loose-leaf binder of how to play. It was a workbook. And it later became his book, Casino Tournament Strategies. But we had it ourselves, our five-man team or six-man team. And before I played any important round, I would go through that workbook again, and it would just get me ready. I would, you know, I would go through it and test myself and test myself. And this is the same thing for poker players. It's not for ring game players. It's for tournament play. And anybody who goes, I was disappointed. It wasn't high level enough. Well, you're too high level of a player. You know, this is, there's a lot of people in the middle market, and pretty much that's what this book is for. I think it's strong.
If we had one of the authors on to talk about this book, which of the five authors would be best?
Tyson.
Tyson?
Tyson, yeah. Tyson's Tyson was, like I say, Lee is the ringleader. Lee Nelson's the ringleader. But Tyson is kind of the guts of the last couple of books because there's so much game theory, and Tyson's just real strong in that area. And then Tony Dunst. You know, everyone loves Tony Dunst because Tony, you know, Tony's known on from TV, and Tony's cool, and you know all that stuff, and I think his Twitter and his emails is Bond this and that. You know, Tony's a cool young kid, but I would say you know Tyson Stribe is kind of the guts of this book.
All right, Caesars Entertainment, they've been threatening to go bankrupt for a long time, and today they did. A month or so ago, I said on this show that I didn't think this was going to affect players very much. And pretty much this is an accounting thing behind the scenes, and the players' clubs will go on as they are. So total rewards will be pretty much the same. Anthony, do you have any thoughts on Caesars Entertainment bankruptcy?
I pretty much agree with you. I don't think there's going to be any major changes that you're going to see. My only thing about it is I wonder kind of what took them so long. You know, you look at an organization like Trump, and you know, bankruptcy, it's got a horrible stigma, but it's got a worse stigma for individuals. And it doesn't have that bad of much of a stigma for corporations.
And you look at the shareholders fighting them on this. I mean,
yeah, and they try to avoid it because they don't want to go through that. But like I say, you look at an organization like Trump that has, you know, Donald Trump has no qualms about declaring bankruptcy because he uses it as a business strategy for the reasons it was created. And Caesars tried and tried and tried to stave it off for a lot of reasons, perception and things like that. And I've talked to some people on the inside that now this is happening, they're going, this is the greatest thing in the world for us. You know, it takes shackles off of us. We can do all kinds of things. In the end, it'll probably be better for everybody concerned except the creditors, you know, who get screwed in a bankruptcy. But they're big banks and things like that, so, you know, can't cry for them too much, although I've been stiff like that and I hate it. But bankruptcy is a legitimate business strategy, and I think they finally had to pull that trigger, and it was a smart thing to do.
But, and now that they're shuffling corporate names, you know, does that mean, well, we'll have to ask Bob Nersesian this, but if they're all becoming different corporations and different names, then if you've been 86, take I think technically you can go back now because it was a different company that 86'd you.
You're always thinking. Yeah,
although, I mean, which kind of brings us to our next story
it
here.
Does. It does. There's a player, card counter, had almost $5,000 in chips, felt some heat, so he went to the cage at Planet Hollywood, said, "Give me my money." They took his chips, says, "Show me your ID." He says, "I don't have to show you ID. Give me my money." And there was some scuffling involved, and eventually he was arrested, and charges were pressed against him. Those charges were eventually dropped, but he still doesn't have his money.
He tried to photograph his chips because they wouldn't give him a receipt,
yep.
Right? They wouldn't give him his chips back.
So Mr. Nassessian is currently involved, and charges were filed. And this is Planet Hollywood, which is part of Caesars Entertainment. There's a similar case, same guy. Harrah's Atlantic City. So I'm surprised we still see these.
My comment when I first saw the article was, you know, when is Caesars ever going to learn? I mean, it just seems like there are more lawsuits against Caesars properties by them abusing players like this than all the other casinos combined.
Do you think that's maybe, though, because Caesars is the biggest, so, it happens more often? Because my feeling on that is that they probably have wised up to some degree. Maybe not. But, I mean, they probably have. But there are so many people that act unilaterally, and they haven't paid attention to what the rule is or, what the company's standing is on this. I can't imagine they're that stupid to keep doing it. That's what I'm saying. But
they keep doing it. I mean,
Here's an example. I know of a situation that happened at SLS, and it looked like it was going to go down. There were some guys I knew personally, and it looked like it was going to go down bad until all of a sudden one guy showed up, one suit showed up, and basically went snap, snap, and everybody just at ease. Everybody stopped. He had a quick word with the guys, and he said, "Goodbye," and they walked out. You know what I mean? This was a guy coming down with the corporate word, but there were a whole bunch of cowboys there before him thinking they knew what they were doing, and they didn't. So, I mean, I can only think that there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, I don't know. After how many millions does it take? You know what I mean?
I know.
It's like eventually somewhere at the top has got to send the word down the line to
– I know. And they've got ways, they've got other ways to do it with people. They've got other ways to keep their undesirables out, that are reasonable. And I just think that often it's unilateral decision making that if they had their way, it wouldn't happen so often.
Mm. And this is for $5,000. Now, of course, the guy was also roughed up a bit. So I'm assuming, and this is speculation, that Bob Nersessian says, "Well, if you give us $125,000, this problem will go away." And they said, "See you in court." Now, I have no idea what the offers were. But anyway, we're going to see Bob Nersessian.
I mean, and at some point, you would think that it's not just the money they lose in the case, but this was a national news story.
Yeah.
And what does that cost them, to when the guy in Iowa is reading about Caesars doing this to players?
I'll tell you, sometimes, my company's got 10 employees, and sometimes something gets done and I get blamed. It's always like, "Here's what you did." And I'm like, "I had no idea that guy did that or that girl did that,"
Yeah.
And that's 10. And so how many tens of how many thousands of, and on top of that do they have? So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, Richard suggested we talk about this next subject. I'm not real sure why. But every Valentine's Day in Las Vegas and a few other places, they have a Cupid's Undie Run, where you run through the streets in your tighty-whities or whatever other undergarment you choose to wear. All proceeds go to charity. Are you and Nelia entering this year, Richard?
No, I just thought, it was a fun thing to, people looking for something different to do in Las Vegas. You can go down and run down Fremont Street in your underwear.
It seems amazing they had to invent another way to get into your underwear in Vegas. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well.
Which actually reminds me, I think the adult video News Awards or whatever that is, the AVN Awards are next week in Vegas at the Hard Rock. So
yeah, yeah. That's an interesting scene, by the way.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe we should go there and see if there's anybody we can get on the show, Bob, that has something to do with...
Well, actually, you and I have something else we're doing Saturday night of next weekend.
Well, yeah, but the AVN is for more than one day, right?
So. Well, yeah. I would think that would be more fun for television than radio, but still.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah.
We could describe what was happening, but yeah. All right, let's do some commercials, and then we have a we're going to be talking about rappelling 27 floors off the side of the Beau Rivage when we get back. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Players who come in a lot are getting double mailers in January. Pick up your regular mailer amount Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and if you pick up you can get the same amount Friday or Saturday. Pick up all six times through the first 3 weeks, and you receive a double mailer amount on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of the fourth week. There will be double points for video poker, 5 times points for slots on Martin Luther King's birthday, January 19th, midnight to midnight, no limits. The new 10-week semester of free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, February 4th at noon in the Grandview Lounge. First class will be Jacks or Better. The date was just selected today, so the rest of the semester will be announced shortly, and the schedule will be up on bobdancer.com probably by Monday of next week. At the Palms, at the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Fridays, where each week the winners share $10,000. You don't need to be there to win, but you do need to claim your prize by midnight or it evaporates. You earn 5 times entries Friday, 8 p.m. to midnight. You also get 2 times entries Fridays between 4 p.m. and 6:30. PFP, Play for Prizes, through tomorrow, January 16th, are up to $175 in Lowe's gift cards and up to $15 in Einstein Bagels gift cards. Beginning Monday, the 19th, they'll be offering the gift cards to TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Home Goods. That's actually the same gift card, maybe redeemed at any of those places. The gift cards can be earned and redeemed Monday through Fridays at a rate of 0.2%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. You can get the strategy for that game from Shaq's website or from me, but if you want to get correction, go to videopoker.com. For most players, you have no idea of how badly you really play until you have a computer program correcting your mistakes. The game of the week is 100 play. No, it's not. The game of the week is Triple Play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coin per line game where periodically the fifth card dealt becomes a dream card, meaning it becomes whatever card is worth the most to you. If you don't like the machine selection, you can change the dream card. There's no strategy change from regular video poker. Playing the 10 coin with the dream card has higher EV than playing the 5 coins of the same games, although it does come with a bit more variance and W2Gs. If you get dealt, royals a lot more frequently because you just need 4 to the royal and a dream card. And so dealt royals at quarters, triple play, or spin poker turn into W2Gs. All right. Let's talk about the Beau Rivage. In Biloxi, Mississippi, the Beau Rivage is a MGM property. And every several months, they have a promotion where you can rappel off the side of the 27th floor down to the ground, and you pay $1,000 to a local charity, the Habitat for Humanity in the Mississippi area. It sounds interesting. Not my cup of tea, but there's lots of people signing up for it. It strikes me as, why doesn't Las Vegas have this? We have bungee jumping. We have zip lines. We have lots of things. And we got lots of tall buildings. So, Anthony, would you go down it if it was from the top of the Rio?
Well, I misunderstood you. I thought you said they were paying you to do it.
No.
They'd have to pay me to do that, and I'd have to think about it. So I don't know. I mean, I've done just about everything that they've had in Vegas over the years as I've done LVA, and the scariest thing I ever did was bungee jump. Scared the hell out of me, man.
Did you do the one at the Stratosphere?
I haven't done that one yet because since that one came on, I've had kind of a back condition, so I haven't wanted to do it. And I want to do it just so I've said I've done every one, but I haven't done it yet. I'm going to try to work that out. But I jumped off that A.J. Hackett one that was over by Circus. And I got to tell you, nothing ever froze me up like that. And I mean, it took everything I had to jump off that thing.
Have you gone on the roller coasters at the top of the
Stratosphere? I've done all of those. Oh. I've done all of them. They're not scary. I think that, I guess I'm saying is I think we got enough things in Vegas. If you really get into it, I mean, for my money, the best of them all is the Big Shot at the top of the Strat, if you've ever done that, which propels you up to the top and you drop, and it's very cool.
Listen, we only have a minute or two left, but I just want to touch on Bob Nersesian is your next book, and that's coming out sometime soon.
We're gonna have two books. We're gonna have two books in 2015. Three, if you count Flop Turn River, which is officially a 2015 book. But we're gonna have two books that are of interest to people that would listen to this show, and one of them is Dustin Marks is Cheating at Blackjack. We're gonna bring. He did two books: Cheating at Blackjack and Cheating at Blackjack Squared, or two, I forget. And we're gonna combine them and update them. So that's one. The other is going to be Bob Nersesian's as yet untitled book for advantage players and, you know, versus the casinos. It's going to be good.
And when do you expect that?
June. Shooting for June. Bob doesn't know that, but if he's listening, it's June.
Okay.
All well, right.
We'll probably have to have him on before that, but we'll have him back whenever the book comes out.
We have a minute and a half, and our guest next week is going to be Billy Baxter. So, Richard, can you tell us who is Billy Baxter?
Actually, I think Anthony could probably tell us more about Billy Baxter than I can.
I don't think so, but I know he's one of the most fascinating people that's ever walked the streets of Vegas. I'll tell you, this guy, there are a few people around that have kind of done a little of all of it, and Billy Baxter is one of them, I'd say.
Right. Big sports bettor, big poker player. He was the guy who backed Stewie Unger for years. And I'm sure he's got a lot of stories to tell, so.
I'm looking forward to that. So, very good.
All right. Well, listen, we really welcome your questions. So you can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or on Facebook /gamblingwithanedge. I'm on Twitter at RWM21. And if you want the show delivered in your sleep, you can sign up to have it delivered through iTunes, YouTube, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. You can see all the old shows at bobdancer.com. That's about it, Bob.
All righty. We hope all of you hit lots of royal flushes. Sometime in the next week or two, my Lawrence is giving me a sign saying, stretch this out. So you can hit stretched royal flushes. And so, Anthony, thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's the best hour of the new year so far. Thanks, guys.
All right. Night, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.